So before we go to the BBC, just a quick one. If you didn't tune in between 9:30 and 10, Kellogg, Southern Africa, said to us, Rice Krispies is coming back. Yes, it's not a heavy story like Iran, for example, or the French meeting the Sahel leaders, but a quick one. You've sent in some voice notes. I just want to play one or two. I will ask the question about Rice Krispies. Do you like that horrid vanilla Rice Krispies? Or are you now going to buy the Rice Krispies, the original, that they're bringing in from England? Why? Because we don't have the processes to put it together here. Take a listen. Let's take a listen to what you had to say.
Morning, Kino. This is the best news I've heard this morning, that Kellogg's is removing the vanilla-flavored Rice Krispies. I thought I was the only one. I was losing my mind. I'm like, but this isn't tasting like the original. It's just way too sweet, and I've been looking for the original Rice Krispies, not realizing it was replaced with vanilla. So thank goodness they are converting it back to the original. It was just way, way too sweet.
And they're not removing vanilla, by the way. They're going to keep it there because apparently people still like eating it. And one more.
Hi, Kino. A question, maybe it's too late to ask her. She's obviously gone. But do they bring the Rice Krispies in bulk packages and box it here? If they don't, seem strange, because if they at least could give some local input by using local boxes and printing them here and then boxing them, the Rice Krispies here. I'm not too sure what are they bringing in big bulk containers and then box it here. But if they don't, then they were killing a lot of good industry here with printers and people who can put recycled paper into boxes. Terry in Durbanville.
Terry, thank you very much for your contribution to the show as well. It is 10:07, the BBC up next.
Today with Kino Cummings,
only on Cape Talk.
So joining you now for a look ahead at some of the big international stories of the week is Audrey Tinlan. She's at the BBC HQ in London. Audrey, great having you on the show again.
Good to talk to you again, Kino. Hi, good morning.
And thank you for the Rice Krispies you guys are sending through to South Africa, by the way. We've been waiting.
No problem.
So Iran is still very much in the headlines this week. We know that over the weekend, Iran admitted that it had shot down that Ukrainian plane that crashed near Tehran last week. And then there were big protests inside Iran itself. What can we expect to see this week?
Well, the situation, as you were just saying there, in Iran has been changing very fast, and there have been lots of shocks and surprises following that U.S. killing of General Qasem Soleimani, and that was just over a week, 10 days ago. So this week, what we'll be looking ahead to is any more details coming out of that investigation into what caused that plane to go down. We now know that Iran has admitted over the weekend that it shot down the plane by mistake. But there are many more answers that governments like the Canadians, for example, want to see. They're sending people there who've begun arriving over the weekend. They want to know exactly what happened and as much information as they can get.
Now, we saw TV pictures of those protests inside Iran this weekend. How unusual are they?
Lots of commentators have been saying that this level of demonstration is unusual. There were demonstrations and in fact, rioting which took place in Iran last year. Those were over different issues inside Iran. So these demonstrations are being seen as fairly unusual. And also in the sort of type of demonstrations, students have been taking part at lots of universities there, yeah. You know.
And I also see that some prominent Iranian sports people are also in support of these protests.
Yeah, what we've heard today is that a couple of prominent Iranian sports people have come out and actually made comments about this. In a post on Instagram, the captain of Iran's men's volleyball team, he's called Saeed Marouf, he spoke in that post of oppression in his country, and that was an apparent reference to the mistaken shooting down of the airliner. He said that he hoped it was the last show of what he called deceit and stupidity. And also on Saturday, Yeah, exactly. These are very strong comments which have come out there. Also on Saturday, Iran's only female Olympic medalist announced that she was defecting. She's a Taekwondo champion called Kimia Alazeda. So those were two things which were noted over the weekend.
I would imagine she was out of the country when she said that.
Well, she has said that she was defecting, so I would imagine that is the case.
So you don't want to be in Iran when you say that, right? So people, yeah, if one just looks at that particular regime, you know, people could disappear for saying things like this. But let's move on to the China-US trade deal. Now, China and the United States are expected to sign this new trade deal this week. What's likely to be in it?
Well, you know, we're still waiting for details. You know, they're starting to come out, but the financial markets, for example, would like to see a lot more detail on this. It's been much heralded. President Trump's very keen to see a sort of high-profile signing, which is going to be taking place in the White House this week. As far as we know so far, you know, there's going to be a Chinese delegation who are going there, led by Vice Premier Liu He, and the Trump administration's invited about 200 people to witness this. What we expect to see in this is that there is agreement from China to purchase more goods from America, so particularly more farm goods. That would be soy, energy, manufactured goods. We're waiting to see what exactly the levels will be and how China will be able to live up to those agreements.
Well, China then, that's only the one side, obviously, you know, China buying from the United States after Trump threw his tantrum. What does China hope to get out of this deal, though?
Well, China hopes that they'll be able to get things back on an even keel, because both economies have been hit. The American economy not greatly, the Chinese economy somewhat more by this trade war, basically, which has been taking place. So China wants to see its economy get back on an even keel. You know, at the end of last year, its GDP figures were pretty low. They were the lowest, in fact, that they've been for three decades. So there are some more GDP figures out for the first quarter. They'll be out at the end of this week. And China wants to see it back to about a 6% level. So that's what they're hoping for.
And time for us to move on to Paris now and look at France, because today French President Emmanuel Macron, he gathers the leaders of the Sahel countries in Paris, the so-called G5. Who's going to be there and why?
Well, they're going to be there at the request of the French president, which itself was a little bit controversial when he first issued that request. But the leaders have said that they are going to be there, and that is expected to take place this week. As your listeners will no doubt know, this region stretches from Senegal on the Atlantic coast through parts of Mauritania, Mali, Burkina Faso. So the people who are going to be at this particular meeting are this G5 group, and they are Niger, Burkina Faso, Mali, Mauritania and Chad. And the task force was put together by the region's leaders and France in 2014. And there's this ongoing and deadly fighting happening across that region, as you hear, you know, on a weekly basis, with many troops from many countries losing their lives.
And then, so one looks at this and has to ask the question, why is France interested in keeping troops in the Sahel, though? I mean, where's the strategic value for them?
Well, France has said, the people on its streets have been saying, and, you know, its political leadership say that, of course, they want the region to be stable for the region itself, in which they have sort of ongoing interest. But they are concerned about the export of terrorism from outside the region, which could go across the world and, of course, to France itself. You know, just to give you an idea of the number of troops there in France, in Mali, for example, France has got a hands-on strategy there, and it's got 4,500 soldiers across the Sahel. And France, you know, is the main driving force behind this. They want to tackle the Islamist fighters there. I have just a little bit of background for you that we can hear now. The BBC's West Africa reporter, Louise de Wass, who is based in Senegal, she's been taking a look and she explains for us why France is there.
The heart of the violence at the moment really is the Liptako-Gourma region. It's an area at the border between Mali, Niger and Burkina Faso. This is a very difficult area to operate in. It's a desert land. There's essentially no roads, no infrastructure, very small villages. This is really the red zone for soldiers at the moment. The French intervention goes back to 2012 when separatist and Islamist militants took over the northern part of Mali. The French intervene in 2013 to help prevent their advance. And a peace deal was signed in 2015, but it hasn't been fully implemented. And new groups, militant groups, have emerged since then. And today the French have 4,500 soldiers across the Sahel region.
So that was our BBC Louise de Wass there with some of those details on the background.
And I definitely see some parallels here with what we've just discussed and the Middle East story, where the United States and others, their allies, want to keep their troops in that particular region, but governments there, like Iraq, might no longer want them to stay.
Exactly. France wants its troops to remain in the region, but some countries in the region do see this as an occupying force even. It may not be the rhetoric which is coming from the leadership of those countries. Many of the leadership want France to remain. They need that support. But there are occasionally demonstrations on the streets in various Sahel countries. You know, there is opposition within there. So that is part of the reason that this summit has been called today in the south of France, because President Macron is hoping that there will be public displays from the Sahel country leaders there, coming out to say, yes, we are happy with France remaining there, and we're all going to work together on this. So, you know, as well as clarifying those, the G5 countries want the French troops to remain. This meeting, the Elysee Palace in France says that this meeting is going to lay the groundwork for increased international support to the Sahel. You know, President Macron does not want to do this on his own. He's not doing it on his own. There are UN troops there as well. Mm-hmm. But he wants allies to join in and to get more involved in the region.
Yeah, I tell you what, Audrey, every day when I hear these sort of things and I look at the analysis, just remind myself while I'm not in politics, the nuances, the complications, the vested interests. So if you ever hear that I ever want to run for any political office, please send me a WhatsApp and tell me not to. So great chatting to you, Audrey Tinlin there, senior journalist at the BBC, based at the HQ in London. It is 10:18. This is Today. I am Kino Kamis, and I'm with you all the way through until 12.